Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann, and I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres. 1-0, Nick. That's 1-0 right. Against the Dodgers this year. Take it when I can get it.
1-0 against the Dodgers. Statement game. That's in the books. That's over with. Done. We got it. I'm not worried about it.
Not at all.
It's really fun. Really fun afternoon of baseball. Just, you know, anytime the Padres and Dodgers get on the field, it matters. That's how I feel. But good thing, you know, we're going to have a really special guest today, Carlo Cicchetto from Channel 8 News, CBS. He's joining the NL West House.
You're now entering the NL West House, presented by TalksChrome.com.
Good to be here, guys.
Hey, Carlo, what's up?
Baseball. you just got to make sure you don't pin me exclusively as like the Dodgers guy. You guys know I actively root for the Padres, right?
I know the cover.
Pin me in that corner.
It's a smart move by you to do what you do.
But it's true.
I know you. I know. I believe you. I want to believe you. But the Dodgers and let's get into it. The Dodgers and Padres played today. And Trevor Bauer and Chris Paddock looked really good. I mean, were you able to watch the?
I saw a couple clips, and for me, spring training. The only thing I pay attention to in spring training is the questions that teams need to have answered, because there's so many that are already answered, right? With the Dodgers, the questions are going to be. You know, where's Kershaw at this year? He pitched yesterday and he only hit 90. If, you know, we know the difference between Kershaw at 90 and 92 to 93 is a number one starter or number four or five starter. So, you know, that's one thing I'm watching. Where is he going to be with that? I'm watching Gavin Lux to see where he's at in his development. Is he taking the next step? Because like last year was a nightmare for him, but last year was a nightmare for a lot of people. So we're not sure if we throw that out. People forget. I mean, he's a very highly thought of prospect and he can really handle the bat. How the back end of the bullpen's looking. I'm really curious to see what Price looks like after a year off to see what he brings. So for me, spring training is never, ever, ever about results, no matter who they're playing. It's just not. It's 100% about who's that guy, how they're developing. Are the pitchers healthy? Are they walking off the mound holding something? Because, you know, that's the whole nightmare, right? You don't want anybody hurt. So that's the more interesting thing. And that's where the Padres are as an organization too. There's fewer of those questions to answer when you're going out. You know, the question today, is Paddock taking a step from last year, which was a disaster? Is he refining his look? Has he got better with his off speed? Does he figure stuff out this year? You know, it's different questions that need to be answered because you know, the big season questions are stuff down the road. Can Tatis stay healthy for a full season? Stuff like that. You know, we can't get an answer on that yet, but we can answer some things in spring training.
Yeah. I mean, do you see, with Clayton Kershaw first, like, you know, he seems like he'll have injury hiccups throughout a season, but he ends up, you know, being ready for the postseason, at least recently. You know, he had a pretty good postseason last year. Even though it wasn't a legitimate postseason, but you know, it was a performance that was worthy. And you know, do you think there could be just a sharp falling off of the cliff, kind of like what we saw with a Tim Lincecum or something like that? It happens to everybody eventually. Do you think it's going to be that drastic?
Sure, but yeah. I mean, I don't expect him to fall off a cliff this year. But I think he could revert to 19 form. You know, and there's a big difference between those pitchers. And he, you know, at the end of the last season, the playoffs. His last start was gutting it out, was you know, bubble gum and duct tape. He wasn't hitting 92, 93. He was just grinding and getting them some quality innings to get to the bullpen. Did he max out and he's going backwards again? I don't know. It's really as simple as what's his fastball hitting? Because if he's not hitting 92, 93, the other stuff doesn't look the same. People catch up to it a lot easier and they light him up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you are watching the Padres sort of get into the mix here. I mean, if you are a Dodgers fan, but like who is the scariest pitcher that you see that we have? Who do you not want to face in like a three game series or a five game series?
Well, a healthy LeMay, not having Lament last year in the playoffs was massive, because down the stretch he was mowing people down, and he was breaking bats on the Dodgers. He was sawing them off. So they lucked out that he wasn't there. I think it felt to me that he seemed to particularly be focused against the Dodgers. Maybe I'm missing on that. You guys would know better. But he looked
that's really what the Padres do. We focus on the Dodgers, unfortunately.
And that's not a good thing, by the way, at this point, because it should be a 162 game season. And you don't want to be focused on just those games. They don't mean that much. The 162 is what matters. In the playoffs, it'll matter. But those head-to-heads during the season, if two up, two low, it's another series. Get to the next one. Get to work. Grind through the full season. But no, it's the whole staff. I mean, it's the whole staff, and that's why it's so impressive. It's they and the Dodgers just have a fleet of arms that are really good, that can do things to you in different ways. And if their first set of starters get dinged up, well, I hate to tell you, but they got young, just rockets behind them. Both teams have 6, 7, and 8 options. I mean, personally, I would take May over the 6, 7, and 8 options that the Padres have right now. I think I think May's upside is a true ace.
Ultimately. Yeah, yeah.
I think Gore is absolutely too, but he still has to show something at the major league level. May's shown a little bit already that he can overwhelm people and make them look just flat out stupid, and just has to figure it out. But they're, I mean, both teams, man, that's what's so exciting this season. Like, just any game against each other, but against anyone else, both these teams are just going to be so damn good.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak too soon. Oh, sorry, Nick. I don't want to speak too soon, but this is lining up for like those prime years between the Yankees and the Red Sox, kind of, you know, divisional type things where you don't know what's going to happen until they just start butting heads.
And I mean, in the Padres front office, if they can keep it together, they are brilliant, because the depth you have to be able to make quality moves if you have to, or if you do get into a, if next year you're like, okay, we do have some salary cap issues next year, some in 22, you have so much young talent underneath it that either that's replacement talent or that's talent that you use to trade to replace it. You know, they've done so well that I'm really optimistic that this isn't going to be like the cyclical smaller markets teams, and they're not a small market team, smaller market teams that they don't have to have a crash. They're being so smart. I expect them to be really good for a while.
Yeah. Well, I think that what you mentioned about the small market thing, like, it's the first time that probably in my lifetime where I didn't have this complex about the Padres aren't spending it as much as the Dodgers. I mean, I guess the Dodgers are spending more technically, right?
Yeah, but
it's still in the same. No, like no, I know. Yeah,
I'm just saying, cheaping anybody.
That's removed from the equation. Like, I don't, I'm not mad about it because I'm not playing in the same sport. Like, we have gone into seasons prior, you know, where the Padres are just not doing anything. They're screwed up with divorces and all that stuff. But
there's something to be said for, you know, just by re-signing guys, you'll re-sign guys who are stars, but there's also that whole, you know, fan service aspect of it that, you know, may stop you from maybe getting rid of a guy that's higher paid later than you should. Mm-hmm. You know, so having bigger budgets doesn't always make you smarter. I think the Dodgers have been very smart, but I think having a disciplined approach and always knowing that you got to grind in that minor league system, you got to keep developing talent. Don't ever let your guard down, and not ever be willing, to make a trade unless it's Tatis of any player when you have to move forward. Right. And that's the thing. You just can't be sentimental. And I think the Padres really, I just admire what they're doing, man.
Yeah. Well, the last few years, the Dodgers have had this amazing run, and it has been a well put together organization where they've developed talent. They've signed key guys and been able to maintain players that have broken out, but you know, they win the World Series last season, and they bring in Trevor Bauer this year, and it does, I don't think it's necessarily screwed up the clubhouse at all in any way, but I mean, is that something that you're keeping an attention to? Is this, could this guy be a distraction? He comes in, he's not a part of the winning, the run from last year. Is that something that is a concern for you, or have you heard that from other Dodgers fans? Like, this guy can really screw things up for us.
I think a lot of Dodgers fans are just like, God, he's a jerk.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I mean, it's more that stuff that we're in, but he's, you know, but is he to the team? I don't know, you know, his, and that's going to be a clubhouse thing. I just don't know. You see early reports, people seem to be getting along fine. And, you know, I think there's something to also be said to not letting your organization get stale. You know, just the, we're going to run it back is, you know, has its own dangers. I don't know. And I don't think that, I don't think one player is going to derail that team either. I just, you know, they have enough resources that if he really became that big of a problem that fast,
he could be gone.
Even with that, even
with that payroll, he'd be gone. Right. Yeah.
I will definitely be watching or listening, however I can consume, the first home game of the season where Bauer is starting. I think like the fan reaction, if fans are allowed, it sounds like they're going to be, it's going to be marvelous. I think it's going to be one of those.
The first Padres game or Dodgers game?
No, Dodgers game. The first home game where Bauer is pitching at home is going to be very interesting.
I think you're going to get a mix. I think you're going to get.
I think you'll get some booze. I think you'll get. Yeah, that's, it'll just be intriguing.
It depends. Right now, I think it's more cheers and lukewarm. You know, let's see what keeps happening with the social media and what kind of tone he takes and what kind of things might flare up. Could go sideways anytime. You know, it's what you do on the field. It's how you're in your teammates. If he can treat fans with respect, you know, I don't think people hold against it. But yeah, I mean, he is definitely some volatility thrown into the mix in that aspect. But the other aspect is, you know, the guy's an innings eater, and I don't know if he's as good as he was last year, but he's definitely a top two pitcher in a rotation, and he's healthy and he's got stuff, and he seems very, very, very serious about his craft. We can say, and he's just wired different. Sure. He does all this other stuff too, but, and he works really hard at baseball. You know, maybe that's why he's just like, doesn't have any social graces. Like, he's just like self-absorbed and practices baseball. Doesn't like think about those things, but he puts in the work. Yeah. And that's always the biggest thing to me on any team, that, you know, when you have a dynamic where the work thing impacts other players, I think that's where you get things that are poison. I mean, that's the whole Lakers Shaq Kobe thing, right?
Yeah.
Kobe like at work, like 24/7 Shaq, you know, the effort's like up and down, and that creates static, right? And you're not going to get that with Bauer.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's got a manager who has a lot of experience dealing with a lot of different personalities. Before last season, when you won that World Series, that Dave Roberts managed. I mean, before he actually wins it, how close were you and other Dodgers fans to really jumping off the Dave Roberts ship there?
I was there. You know, without a real run, without some growth and change last year, but last postseason, didn't he answer all the questions? You know, he showed that he could look at Kenley and go, nope. Fortunately, he didn't have to answer the question really with Kershaw, although he was aggressive about getting him out when it was clear he had to, right? So I think Roberts has shown he can grow and learn. And I think he did. And I think for most Dodgers fans, that last year with all the craziness, having to manage it, but then the actual in-game decisions that he made, you know, putting Urias out there and saying, go get him, and not pulling him soon, and not going, you know, saying, okay, now we got to get a closer in there. Nope, you're going to finish up. He showed his feel as well as understanding what they're doing with their big picture analytics and all that. It seems like he's figured the two out, put them together finally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he definitely, I was reading, you know, Twitter and listening to, you know, Dodgers fans really freak out about his, you know, his playoff in-game decision making, but was it always pinpointed on trusting certain guys in big situations like that, or was there other stuff that maybe outsiders wouldn't really pick up on?
I mean, I think as a somebody who watched Dodgers, I think the biggest thing was just they felt an over-reliance on Kenley and Kersh, where it was the two biggest things that he just couldn't get himself out of just going to them. And yeah, he showed that he could break that. That was it. I mean, everyone loves Dave Roberts. Padres fans love him. He's a San Diego. Everybody loves Dave Roberts.
Yeah.
But the decisions were what people were worried about. And I think he's growing. You got to grow. You know, managers have to show that they can learn, get better. And I think he did. As guys watching this World Series, didn't you guys feel like, oh, he's figuring it out now?
Oh, we didn't watch the World Series.
Oh, you're lying.
I was like, yeah,
you were hate watching. You were absolutely hate watching. There's no chance you weren't.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, no.
No, he did look much better. He did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, maybe the talent behind Kenley, they had enough of finally where he felt like he could do that. You know, Brusdark, Gratterall, Gonzalez, Trainin, and even Joe Kelly. Some, you know, those guys gave him real options.
Yeah, I also think it's really hard. These major league managers, they can have the best regular season, and then if they go on a run like that, like an extended couple year run like this, and they get into these situations where they make one decision, it can go either way, and then just what I mean these bullpen decisions in these playoff series can ruin careers. It can ruin careers. Like
I don't know how it would have turned out, but I mean, really, you pulled Blake Snell? I mean, maybe the third time through they would have lit him up. Maybe that's what would have happened, right? But that's a place where that's an example where I would say where even if that's what the book had said with the Dodgers in the past, that I think Roberts would have in that position said, nope, he's gonna go until I think that we're actually in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, that's the balance. I think, you know, you can't ignore, you know, real analytics and really having a plan and really monitoring your all those things, those third time through the starting rotation, through the starting lineup, all those things all matter and they're real, but there's also got to be a little bit of, I understand who my guy is. And right now I know he can get another out or two.
Yeah.
And I that's what I think was removed from the Snell situation last year, because it did not feel like you were worried about Snell not being able to get another out or two.
Yeah. We got a great Players Tribune piece out of it. So that was the plus side of it. Did you read that? Yeah.
I didn't, I heard about it, but I
it's
didn't.
Really good. Yeah.
Cause Snell was like, yeah, I could have kept going.
Yeah.
Of course. Now you got him to be a little extra salty this year facing the Dodgers more. So good for you guys. Right.
Yeah. You know, he's
yeah. That Snell situation was like, even people that weren't familiar with the Tampa Bay at all, like watching that game, just any baseball fan, never heard of Snell before, watching him pitch, would know that he could have kept going. It wasn't, but the computer from upstairs was like, my algorithm had said pull him. So yeah, very bizarre.
Yeah. And that's where I think you have to have someone who in game at least can, there's gotta be margins there. Right. And they've got to be this, the human element still matters in baseball and sports, no matter what. Analytics are great for sports, but if they're all you do, I think you're missing out. I think it's going to help things. I think monitoring pitch counts, all those things, you know, I think they make the game better, because I think you've got more better pitches being thrown deeper into the season overall by a stat because of it.
Yeah.
You know, all these things matter, but you can't, they're not robots.
Right.
Yeah. There's a human element to it that you have to pay attention to.
Yeah, that's and as fans, you don't want it when it becomes that predictable, it gets a little bit weird too. Like with that's one of the things, you know, every few years the NBA's will tweak certain things, because like right now, it's like corner threes and dunks, right? You know, they're gonna have to look at ways to like tweak it up, because you don't want the game to be that formulaic and that predictable. You want to have, you know, some creativity and some human element to it.
Well, it's going to be an interesting race for the NL West here, but something happened last week where I want to get your opinion on it, because you've done a lot of great coverage of the pandemic. Thanks a lot. Your Twitter feed has been really useful in our house. We check it all the time for the stats, and yeah, you've done a great job. Baseball might be seen live by in a certain way. I don't know how that's going to play out, but it sounded like Gavin Newsom has decided that we can go into major league ballparks if we're in certain tiers. What did you think about that decision, and how do you think this is going to ultimately play out?
Okay. So about a week ago, I put out a tweet saying, I see a change coming to the tiers, to the way they do that, to our reopening plan. I didn't know what it was. But the biggest goal, other than saving lives, and it's a part of saving lives, the biggest stated goal has always been preserving the healthcare system, right? Maintaining the integrity of it so it didn't get overwhelmed, so that quality of care didn't go to nothing, so you had even more people dying just because they couldn't get care. Mm. Well, once you got to a certain amount of the most vulnerable population to dying, the older people who are most likely to get most sick, and you had less of a chance of the healthcare system getting overwhelmed. So the tier systems and the opening system that was created wasn't really, we weren't operating under the same rules anymore. So things were going to have to change. And I think that what we're seeing now is not think, what we're seeing now is definitely a product of that. They know that there's less of a chance of getting a real run on the healthcare system for many reasons. And then you have the two things, you have the rates going down and the number of shots going into arms going up. So we're still in the purple tier technically. It was 1.6 million shots, doses into these vulnerable communities in California. They really wanted to get shots into these specific zip codes, 400, where COVID is severely impacted, underserved communities. They wanted to get people in those where they have so many essential workers, where they have dense populations, so many things working against them. So they want to get those shots there. But once we get to 2 million in those 400 zip codes, they're easing things up. They're changing the tiers. And it makes sense to me. I think you're still going to have for a while some social distancing. You know, we're starting out with 20% in Petco. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like when we talk about the park and the park. Like, I don't know what the configuration is going to be, but it makes sense to me. And I do think that you'll have that April 1st. And I think we'll get into that next tier after that quicker than people maybe are thinking about right now. It's one of those, you know, when we were talking about testing last year, right? It's like, God, you can't get a test. Testing's slow. It's like, there's all this battle. And all of a sudden, you know, it seemed like it exploded. It's like, yeah, you had this massive, that's the ramp up with the vaccinations we're going through. And the delivery systems in California have ramped up a great deal. And now it's about the intermittent flow of the vaccine, but we should be doing better with that. And we saw yesterday around the country, we had 2.9 doses given out yesterday, 2.9 million. I mean, it beat the previous best day by, I think, 500,000. So I think we can be optimistic about seeing a game in person and seeing a lot of people in stands by midsummer, a lot of people in stands. Yeah. I'm hoping we'll have full capacity by the end of summer. I don't know that. These are purely just, these are guesstimates of news guys just been watching the process. Right. And you know, don't hold me to these, but as watching the process and how it's gone out and listening to the different language that these people in power have used and when and why, I feel pretty optimistic about it.
Yeah. Well, that first Dodgers Padres series at Petco Park with, even if it's 20% capacity, that should be a wild, wild time. It's going to be a fun race, and we'll be tweeting mean spirited things at you all season. And if you want to do the same, follow Carlo at Carlo News 8 on Twitter.
What series? So are we gonna look for one of those series late in the year? Are we getting together to going one of these? We're gonna have a little like fun group.
Yeah.
We'll have to party like it's 2021 for sure.
Time into that. I want to do that. We got to get in there and go have some fun.
Yeah, yes. you got a Kept Faith koozie coming your way. I was harassed by the Kept Faith, but cool. Yeah, seriously, Carlo. You know, you've done great coverage throughout this whole maddening period in American life. Thanks for your service and keep doing great work.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on. It's weird. I had to say before I came on, I just remembered, you know, we talked last year. I was driving home from an interview with Dr. Phil, you know, I think February last year. We didn't even know this was coming. It was like, man, what a effing year it's been. It's just like,
everything's different. Yeah.
Hopefully some normalcy will be coming to us.
All right. Thanks, Carlo.
You guys do. You guys are great.
Cool. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Millard Thomas from Locked On Diamondbacks. So maybe he might make us feel better about everything, because the Diamondbacks are in a rough shape, but he's a good guy. And the Diamondbacks. Yeah. But no, we had a great conversation, and just check this out. Millard Thomas.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising. She'll find the note I left hanging.
All right, hey, we're back in the NL West House with Millard Thomas from the Locked On Diamondbacks podcast. You can follow Millard at CreatorThomas24 on Twitter, and check out his website, MillardThomas24MyPortfolio.com. He's a designer as well, and he's putting on a great podcast. Thanks for coming on, Millard.
Yeah, thank you. And you said it right when you said the portfolio name. It's Millard. I should have
Millard, sorry.
No, you're good. I probably should have told you before we started pod.
Well, yeah, check out all his stuff. He's doing pretty much a pod every day on the Locked On Network. Yeah. And, well, let's dive right into it. You know, the Padres have had a pretty interesting offseason, but, you know, there's other teams in this division. And, you know, I think the Diamondbacks and the Padres relationship, we don't really – we play every year and, you know, several times a year. And I don't know that much about how the fan base works and, you know, what they're really going through. What's going on in Diamondbacks land? Last season, you guys had a little disappointing season in that weird season during the early part of the pandemic. But what are you looking forward to now this year in 2021?
Yeah, I'm not too sure. It feels like the D-backs are in purgatory right now, honestly, heading into the 2020 season. I mean, we had some high hopes. I was a guy who was saying this team was going to be a playoff team. I thought they were coming off a 2019 season where they won 85 games. They looked like they were moving in the right direction. So 2020, yeah. You know, we had high hopes. We thought we were going to at least be a wild card team. You know, no one thought we were going to win the division because of the Dodgers and, you know, the Padres haven't quite arrived yet in 2020. So I didn't see them. I saw them as a threat, but I wasn't like super scared of the Padres just yet. But after 2020, I don't know what to think of this team, honestly, heading into the 2021 season. There's a lot of question marks. What's going on with center field? Who's going to be the fifth starter in the rotation? Who's going to be the closer? So right now, I mean, the D-backs are probably going to be what they always are, a team that's scrappy, that's going to be in it toward the end, but they're probably going to ultimately fall short of the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, you know, if it does seem like that the Padres and Dodgers have created this arms race going for the top of the NL West. The Dodgers, I mean, nobody can really say that they're better than the Dodgers until they beat the Dodgers, but you know, it does seem like a top heavy division. What are you looking forward to? Who are some of the players that you're looking forward to seeing possibly blossom? Maybe not as on a contending team, but you know, who are you looking at on the roster besides Ketel Marte, who we all know, and some of the other Escobar, some of those players. Yes. Yeah. Who should we as Padres fans be afraid of, basically?
Okay. Well, yeah. If we're not talking about the big name players, because yeah. I was going to say Zach Gallen.
Oh, yeah. That's, I want to ask you about him later, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. We'll get to him later then. But yeah. Who to be afraid of? I mean, are there any scary dudes on this D-backs team? You probably got to watch out for maybe a Luke Weaver acquired in that Paul Goldschmidt trade. So we need a return on that investment. I mean, we traded our franchise cornerstone player. So D-backs are looking for a return on that investment. He looked pretty good in 2019. It didn't look good at all in 2020. So he's a big bounce back candidate in 2021. Another guy, Madison Bumgarner, gave him a $85 million deal, highest paid dude on the roster. And he has to live up to the contract if the D-backs have any shot at contending this year. He was really bad last year. His fastball velocity is only about 88 miles an hour nowadays. So he can't get it up anymore. So he's going to have to reinvent himself as a pitcher and turn into a more finesse location pitcher, more like a Zach Greinke nowadays. But in terms of maybe, you know, guys in the starting lineup, maybe a Dalton Varsho. He's not expected to be there opening day, but he's a young guy, one of the top prospects, played a little bit in 2020, didn't have a great season last year, but it was COVID, so we could chalk it up to a pretty weird year. But he's probably a guy that D-backs fans are most excited for and really want to see on this team and really want to see get some reps under his belt in 2021.
Yeah. I mean, so there's a couple guys on the roster that, like, you know, last year, it's so hard to evaluate the team, any sports team, really, from last year having such a weird season. But, you know, a guy like Escobar, who's been would you say he's a cornerstone, has been of the franchise for the last 4 or 5 years or 3-4 years? What do you think? Do you think it's possible for him to have a bounce back season?
I mean, I think he can definitely have a bounce back season because he's still not that old. He's still only 32 years old. And 2020, he came into shape a little bit out of camp. So now we're hearing the cliche, best shape of my life, of course, you know, when it's spring training. So hopefully Escobar could come in and, you know, he said he's dropped some weight. So we'll see what that produces. But his 2019 season, he basically had a career year for the D-backs. I don't know if I would consider him a cornerstone to your question, just because he's only been with the D-backs since 2018 when he was acquired like mid-season from the Twins. So I don't know if he's a true cornerstone, came over at like 29 years old, but he is one of the most important players on this D-backs team. They need a good Eduardo Escobar for their offense to click. He's a big-time slugger in that middle of their lineup. And if he's, you know, the 2020 version of Eduardo Escobar, then this team really has no chance of putting runs on the board.
Yeah, I know. I just watching so many Diamondbacks games against the Padres, he's one of the guys in the recent past that just, he always seemed like he was destroying the Padres. I was always afraid of him. I mean, yeah, he had a little, he was down last year, but yeah, that's a, it's amazing. You know, the recent like run or the recent core that's been together under the Terry Lavallo in that era, like, how do you feel about him as in general as a manager? Do you think that he's the right manager for this type of roster in the place that it is?
Yeah, I mean, I like Torrey Lovello. Him and Mike Hazen, the GM, had a connection dating back to their time with the Red Sox. So I think they share a similar vision. I think that's really important to have your GM and manager on the same page in terms of the X's and O's. I think he does just a fine job. I mean, I don't really get into it when it comes to managers from the analytical side. I mean, I don't try to pretend I know more than these guys. So in terms of the decision-making he does most of the time, I usually ride with what Torrey Lovello does. Is he the best manager in baseball? Probably not. But when you look at most of his in-game situations, he usually makes the right plays, usually puts in the right dudes for those, you know, cross matchups, you know, righty versus righty, lefty versus lefty. So usually has a strong command of the game. And I've liked what I've seen from Torrey Lovello. I wish the team could, you know, maybe get over the hump and really contend in the postseason. Not saying they have to win a World Series, but if they could get out, you know, past the championship, not the championship series, the division series, and make it to a championship series, I think that would be pretty cool. So right now, Torrey Lovello is the manager for 2021, but hey, if it's another season where the D-backs look absolutely putrid, he could be on the hot seat. He's been there, I think this could be his fifth season now. So if it's his fifth season, only one time to the postseason, I think that's not a great track record.
Well, yeah, you look at his first season with the first season he was there, it was 93 wins, and it surprised a lot of people. I think that team kind of, I don't know if people were ready for that, but is the ownership group that's in place now, how are they framing this to Diamondbacks fans? Are they saying, okay, you know, that the Dodgers and Padres are kind of the cream of the crop, but we're rebuilding in a certain way? Are they trying to package that and try to sell fans on a future in any way?
It's really hard what they're trying to do. They're trying to maintain competitiveness while still adding to a young core and still adding to their farm system. They're not trying to go, you know, all chips to the middle of the table, but they're trying to remain competitive and build a playoff team without mortgaging the future at the same time. And being a small market team, they're just not going to go out there and spend money. We saw that this offseason when your biggest signings are Adrubal Cabrera and Joaquin Soria and Tyler Clippard. You're just not going to be a team that spends money. So the ownership, they're trying to package it as we're trying to be competitive. We're trying to be a playoff team. But at the same time, we're not going to just go out there and spend money on dudes who we don't think we're just not going to overpay dudes in the pursuit of a championship. So they're trying to be competitive, but at the same time, they're not going to mortgage their future and put all the chips to the middle of the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been an interesting few years for the Diamondbacks. I mean, yeah, they lose Goldschmidt, and then what happened during the aftermath of, say, the Zach Greinke experiment, I guess you would say? I mean, they signed a huge deal with him and he's gone pretty soon after that. I mean, what did the fan base go through that? Or was that just a sign of things not being stable, or how was that processed?
Yeah, I think the fan base kind of understood the Zach Greinke trade. He was a little bit older, and you know, the D-backs weren't really in a position to contend for a World Series. So they didn't, I don't think they minded getting off that contract and getting back, you know, three of the top five prospects in the Astros organization. It was the Paul Goldschmidt trade that was really gut-wrenching, honestly. I mean, you're trading, you know, the guy's been a savior for this franchise for like a decade, and then to see him get traded for, you know, financial reasons as always, and to get back, you know, not really anybody established. I mean, as I mentioned before, Luke Weaver, we got back. We also got back our starting catcher Carson Kelly in that deal, but both of them looked good in 2019, and then both of them fell off in a big way in 2020. So Paul Goldschmidt, he's still putting in work in St. Louis. He's now teaming up with another division rival in Nolan Arenado. He's thriving over there. So us D-backs fans were a little bit sad to see that, you know, the trades for Greinke and Paul Goldschmidt haven't really materialized just yet, but we might see Corbin Martin, who came over in that Zach Greinke trade. He's going to be fighting for a rotation spot this year. You know, Luke Weaver, you know, people still love him and his potential. Carson Kelly, he's still got a lot of potential. So right now we're banking on potential with these young dudes that came over from those two trades.
Yeah.
Was the bump, the Greinke and Goldschmidt trade the same year too? Do those happen the same offseason?
I think they were pretty close, but I don't think they were technically the same year. Greinke, I think, was a mid-season trade.
Oh, it was.
And
okay.
Then I think
to the Astros. Yeah.
That could be like devastating. That could be like falling off a cliff if both those were.
Yeah.
I know they were around the same time, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, because all the rumors and whispers were around the same time of who's going to get traded first, Zach Greinke or Paul Goldschmidt.
Right. And then they both were gone first by the beginning of the next season. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think just so. That's gut-wrenching.
Yeah. We're used to it as Padre fans. I mean, we totally get it. So we empathize completely.
Oh, yeah, we were talking to Ryan Latica from Locked On Rockies a couple weeks ago, and we were just kind of walking him through with the Nolan Arenado trade. And just knowing that pain, knowing what that's like. You know, we had it with Adrian when we lost Adrian Gonzalez when he was entering his prime. And yeah, that's a tough one. It's a tough one to watch, especially when you watch the teams try to sell it back to the fans. I don't know. I think fans are smarter now. I don't know if they could just pull it off anymore to get away with it. But there is hope for the Diamondbacks. And, you know, you've talked about it a lot recently on your podcast. Zach Gallen is this stud pitcher. He's entering, what, his 25-year season?
Yeah.
Tell me about him and just what he means to the future plans.
Yeah, let me see his age real quick. But Zach Gallen, okay, yeah, he's 25. Yeah, I didn't even realize he was still that young. But yeah, this dude is everything for the future plans. I mean, we want to see it over 162 game season. But so far, the two short seasons he's been with the D-backs, he's been, I can't understate it, one of the best pitchers, honestly, in baseball. He was a Cy Young caliber pitcher last year. He set the major league record for most consecutive starts to begin your career, allowing 3 earned runs or fewer, I think with 23 consecutive starts. So this guy has been an absolute stud for the D-backs, and we just want to see it crystallize over a full season just to give us that full confidence. But everyone's already fully confident in Zach Gallen. So if he's that true ace and he shows it again one more time in 162 game season, that at least means you got a frontline starter, and it's just a lot easier to build your team and a championship roster if you know you have a true ace. So Zach Gallen gives the D-backs fans a lot of hope for the future.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're in the NL West house. I'm just curious, what do you think of the division? How do you think it's going to shake out? Is it, where do you think the Diamondbacks are going to fall end up in the division, and who do you think is going to ultimately win it?
Yeah, I was talking to Ryan Latica today too. We did a crossover pod, and we were just pretty much ranking the teams in the division. And of course, the cream of the crop of the division are the two teams at the top in the Padres and Dodgers. And we're still leaning Dodgers right now over Padres, but we both said at the end of the season, if you told us the Padres were the best team in the division, no one would be surprised by that. But we both kind of agreed. We think, what were you going to say?
They did win today. They did beat the Dodgers today. So, we're 1-0. We're taking all
right,
if the Dodgers are going to claim that the last season's World Series was legit, we're claiming the spring training games as legit. So we're 1-0 already. Yeah. Just bringing that out
just
there.
A statement.
Not
game.
That I'm counting, but we are counting. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get that parade going. But I think me and Ryan both agreed that the Giants, we think they're the third best team right now. I think the D-backs could definitely be better than the Giants. But after last season, I put money on them to finish last in the division, and they blew away my expectations. So I'm not going to mess with the Giants this season. They're feisty. I like their starting lineup. Their rotation has a lot to, you know, to a lot to be desired, but Kevin Gosman's pretty good. And then for the D-backs, they have
Yastrzemski kid too, whoever that is.
Yeah, Mike Yastrzemski. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
He was like a waiver wire star and scared of,
man. Yeah, that guy's nuts. He can carry a team almost.
Yeah, and he's like a 30-year-old rookie or something. So he's an interesting guy. Yeah. But I think the D-backs could definitely finish ahead of the Giants at the end of the season. I think those two teams would be close. And then Ryan and I pretty much agree the Rockies are, you know, the barrel at the bottom when it comes to the division.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Where is – I want to ask this because we've dealt with this in San Diego, issues with stadiums. What's the deal with Chase Field and what's the plan for the Diamondbacks as far as are they moving soon or how's that going to work out?
I'm not too sure, honestly. I know there's been a lot of rumblings about the stadium. I think right now the ownership is saying that they're staying put in Phoenix and they're not moving, but it always seems like there's always rumors that they could be, you know, changing it and going to different parts of Arizona, maybe to Scottsdale or Glendale, where they already have the hockey arena and the Cardinals arena. Those two stadiums are literally on the same lot right next to each other. So maybe they want to go put the Diamondbacks stadium, Chase Field, as well over there. But right now, I don't think they plan to move Chase Field. It's in the heart of downtown Phoenix. It's in a pretty good spot. You know, I used to go to school in downtown Phoenix at Walter Cronkite. So it was only right down the street. So I was able to just walk to a game from my dorm if I ever want to. So I like the location of Chase Field. I think it's in a good spot. I think most fans like where Chase Field is. I think it's in a pretty central location. There's been rumors, but I don't think Chase Field is moving in the next few years.
Yeah.
There's really rumors about this. I didn't hear this. I mean, a little
there's
bit.
There's been talk about it
like
for years.
24 years is now like, or 23 years is now the life of a ballpark? Or 33, sorry, 98.
Well, ask the Texas myself. Rangers fans. Yeah,
It opened in 1998, correct? Like I was graduated from high school when this thing opened. How old am I? Like what's going on? Is this, how old is this ballpark?
It's not very old.
Yeah, it's not that old because the D-backs are an expansion team in the late 90s. So it's not that old of a ballpark. And I think they did like re-up the deal because I think my sophomore year of college, which was like 3 years ago, there was rumors of them moving because it was like, I think the lease was up or something like that. But I think they re-upped their deal and they're staying in Phoenix for the next few years at least.
Yeah, I was reading about it off and on over the years, and it just seemed like there was some dispute about whether the county should pay for the upkeep of the stadium and the ownership was getting, you know, that old thing.
Those are tall tale signs that it might be being torn down. Let me tell you, because the Qualcomm, Jack Murphy, San Diego Stadium, whatever you want to call it, is slowly and painfully being torn down in San Diego. And that's what it started with was, well, the city can't afford to maintain it or whatever.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's
something to watch.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you know, the NL West is going to be a fun race. And I hope for Diamondback fans that they can have something to build on for the future. I mean, I don't know what it's going to take to overtake the Dodgers. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever see a better assembled team than this. I don't know.
So. I mean, if you want to just spend money, I mean, a lot of teams could do what the Dodgers are doing. You just have to go out there, trade for Mookie Betts, go out there, sign a Trevor Bauer. You can't be afraid. I mean, there's no salary cap in baseball. A lot of these teams could do it. You just claim that they don't have the money to do it, even though baseball's racking in billions of dollars.
Yeah. What's your opinion of baseball going into, you know, this next era after the pandemic? Do you think that baseball's doing a good job reaching out to younger people? I mean, we have Tatis on the Padres and he seems like he represents something to the generation coming in. He plays with a flair and a way of expressing himself that, you know, might turn off the old heads out there. But what do you think the future of baseball is as far as getting in younger fans?
Yeah, Tatis can definitely connect with the younger fans. He's a guy who, I mean, we, you guys know, he's so much fun to watch. He's a true superstar. But I don't know. I think it's – I don't know what baseball could do. They can definitely market their players better and let, you know, let the dudes have fun, you know, get the bat flips going. But I don't know if that's going to bring the youth into the game. I think it just might be the actual sport of baseball, why people don't watch. It's 162 games, and they're hours long. And you would be surprised to know that the average baseball game is shorter than the average football game. I looked this up like a few weeks ago, but it doesn't feel that way. You feel like baseball games are going on for hours. And we, you know, anytime someone talks about why they don't like baseball, they say it's because of the lack of action. And I don't know what baseball has to do to improve that. I'm a big proponent of shortening the season. We could go to 120 games. I don't think that, you know, that makes a big difference. I don't know if the players want to do it because of money, but just as a fan, I don't care if we move to 120 games. And in spring training, they've been doing, you know, shorter games. We've been seeing 7-inning games. So I wouldn't be opposed to that either, doing a 7-inning game. Anything that could bring more eyeballs to the sport and speed up the games and bring a little bit more juice and action to the game, I'm a fan of. So I'm not someone that's just want to be stuck in their ways when it comes to baseball and the tradition of everything. I'm all about evolution, baby. And I would love to see the game evolve.
Well, yeah, there definitely seems to be a big problem with how the team or the league is able to market stars. I mean, in the NBA, pretty much, you know, Damian Lillard is a household name, but Ketel Marte is not around the country. And that's a failure, I think, by the leadership in the MLB. But I don't know. It seems like they're positioning Tatis in a way that could break through all that and really show corporate America that they can actually use these stars from other countries and market them. I don't know. I hope it is a breakthrough in some way.
Yeah. And I also don't like what teams are doing recently. When you see the Nolan Arenado trade and the Mookie Betts trade,
sure,
teams just getting off their franchise cornerstone players because they don't want to pay them. And then they're not even getting great returns back. The Rockies didn't get a return, you know, a decent return back, and they're still paying Arenado's contract. Like, that stuff makes no sense to me, at least in basketball and the NBA or other sports. Guy like Anthony Davis gets traded. You're getting the whole farm for Anthony Davis. You're getting all the best young players on the Lakers. You're getting all their draft picks. That just doesn't happen in baseball. When your team is trading your franchise cornerstone player, you're stuck like the D-backs, who are just banking on these two young dudes, hoping they blossom into something, when most of the time these prospects don't turn out to be anything.
Yeah. Well, we know that story, and you know, you can, if you're curious, you can check out all of our episodes up until this season.
All the misery.
It happens across the country. It happens to all these markets where these fans go. They dedicate so much time and money to, you know, their entertainment dollar to these teams, and then they pull stuff like that, and it's sad. And I think that might be the deeper problem with baseball, but. You know, well, it's going to be a fun season, and I hope maybe you can come on sometime when we've played the Diamondbacks for the third series, and we're both tired of looking at each other's teams, and we can talk about it. So,
no, yeah, I'll definitely get you guys on my pod pretty soon, sure, because I try to bring a guest on every Tuesday or Thursday. So I'll definitely hit up you guys in the future, honestly.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, you can follow Millard Thomas at Creator Thomas 24, Millard Thomas 24 at myportfolio.com.
Yep.
And he does a podcast on the Locked On Network every day, right?
Yeah. So, now that we're in season, it's 5 days a week. So it's cool. A grind for sure. But, you know, gotta love talking baseball, I guess.
Yeah. I've been really enjoying listening to you and Ryan's shows, just to get a feel for these other fan bases are going through. Cause you know, It's really fascinating to see. And you do get to, if you guys check it out, you will hear some Padres talk. You get to hear it from their perspective. So,
yeah, I mean, it's more fun talking about the Padres than the D-backs.
Right? I think so. Well, cool. Thanks
strange
for coming
times.
On. The, you know,
we're
the NL.
Strange times.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the Kept Faith podcast, and check out the keptfaith.com and check all the other platforms we're on. So we'll see you next time on the Kept Faith, probably right before the season. All right.
Yeah, bye. No problem. Yeah, thanks for bringing me on.
Sure. Keep the faith.